807 Hudson Valley Focus 5 on the Beacon. Valley Revolutionary Roots, Rev 250, Orange County historian Johanna Poore in studio with me. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
I thought you were going to be on the phone. We've never met before, so it's an absolute pleasure to have you in studio with me.
Thank you.
And gosh, it's just, Johanna, I can't even begin to describe. I wanted to play that little musical introduction there, which is from your website, Orange County website. But we have such an incredibly rich history here throughout the entire Hudson Valley, and you know, this will be the first of hopefully many conversations with you here on Hudson Valley Focus Live in the months and perhaps years ahead. Your counterparts, Will Tatum in Dutchess, Eddie Moran in Ulster, I can't remember who the woman who was from Rev 250 in Westchester, one of the reenactors, was in with us.
Connie Kehoe, probably.
And we'll have folks in from Putnam County. We've gone as far north as Fort Ticonderoga. So it's just, you know, great to look back and to see where we are, and also with the idea of, as we look to rebuild and restore our economy here in New York and the Hudson Valley. You know, in a couple of weeks, we'll be over at West Hills Country Club in Middletown with the Council of Industry, with their breakfast, Manufacturing Champions Awards breakfast, all from the founding of this country all the way through now, we've been innovators and builders, and we continue that tradition.
It's our time to shine. Every 50 years, the country looks at the Revolutionary War history again, and you know, Hudson Valley is so saturated with Revolutionary War history that
yes,
it's a great time for all of us historians to get unified on, you know, putting all of this material together, reevaluating it, putting programming together, and educating the public. And we get overshadowed a lot by Boston or Colonial Williamsburg or these other places that put a lot more tourism dollars towards the history.
Mm-hmm.
But we almost can't go wrong with everywhere you go, you stumble over the history here, and there's an anniversary happening almost every week that's important enough that we are promoting it, you know, all from now all the way until 2033.
Yes.
Because the events that took place in the Hudson Valley span the entire length of the wartime period.
And I mean, to that point, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that just last week in this hour, Master Sergeant Torin Olson, Director of Marketing Communications, the band at West Point was in with us. Might think, well, what does that have to do with it? Well, music and the events that they're involved in as part of many of the Rev 250 celebrations that are happening throughout, they're going to be an integral part of it. And as you said, West Point itself has events planned now through 2033.
Yeah, their official founding was 1778. So 2028, I'm sure we're going to see a lot of federal attention at West Point.
Yes.
But even last weekend, or a week and a half ago, I guess now, we had the Brigade of the American Revolution, which is the national reenacting organization,
mm-hmm.
and they had their annual conference at West Point. So there's already a lot of activity happening here.
You know, there certainly is. You have a beautiful document, beautiful guide, Orange County Sesquicentennial Commission 250, New York document, Birthplace of the Republic. You've got, you know, a hard copy of it with you, but Robbie's going to be posting the online version out there as well. And, you know, huge thank you and shout out to Orange County Executive Steve Newhouse for, you know, putting his support behind these efforts.
Yeah, it's been very grassroots. Of course, there's a national commission and a state commission, but
mm-hmm.
it's really come down to the local communities, the historical societies and museums and local historians. We have a local historian law in New York State, so every town, village, city, and county has a historian. And everybody's been on board forming commissions or committees in order to figure out what works best for their local community. So in Orange County, we formed a commission, and we have been meeting to come up with strategies. So one thing that we're going to do is we're going to restore the Minisink Monument, which is the burial site of the soldiers that died at the Battle of Minisink. And so that'll be happening in the next year and a half. And then we have other projects, including creating this field guide. So mm-hmm. The field guide is really meant to be a handheld guide that you can throw in your car.
Yes.
And when you drive around Orange County, every time you see a historic marker or something that, you know, looks like an old stone house or something interesting, you can stop and look at the guidebook and see, you know, how it fits into the Revolutionary War history.
You know, I found in looking at your Orange County Historian website a link to local government historians by region and county. What a fabulous resource.
Yeah, there's a group, a national or a statewide group called AFNES, the Association of Public Historians of New York State. And we are a big force of a resource, really, of knowledge and information on a local level, but also record keeping, archival. You know, we're able to locate records, even if they're not within our own collections. Mm-hmm. It's a group of people that have a lot of knowledge that can help source things.
I had said to Robbie, looking at that, Regions 3 and 4, Region 3, Dutchess, Orange, Putnam, Rockland, Westchester, Region 4, Columbia, Delaware, Green, Sullivan, Ulster. I mean, that makes up like the bulk of my broadcast area. So, you know, as Robbie's looking to contact additional people, because it's not only the county historians, but you have the organization has listed out all the different municipalities, etc.
Yes, and we all love to talk, so invite us all.
There you go.
We'll be happy to.
And it really is, I think it's really important to showcase this. So much of our history of this nation, I don't want to throw stones at people, but, you know, through the education system over the last, let's say, 30 years or so, maybe some of this hasn't gotten the attention that it should have gotten to remind folks where we came from.
Yeah, that's, you know, there's a blind spot in our history curriculum, especially when it comes to local history.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, you know, to insult anybody or especially not the teachers, because they're really stuck having to work within a framework.
Yes.
And so, you know, they have certain things they have to teach. They have certain things they need to test for. And a lot of times the local history just doesn't make the cut.
Right.
There just isn't enough time to fit it in. And some teachers, many that I deal with, because I get invited into classrooms
mm-hmm,
sometimes,
mm-hmm.
Are very good about finding a way to connect it to the local history, whether it's through these anniversary dates or you know, whether it's through field trips or other ways. But it's difficult for the teachers to find the time to get it in there. And I, you know, the way I see it is I love to go into a classroom because it's hard to reach every kid because they're not getting this constantly. It's not reinforced all the time. But you know you're going to reach one or two or three and you're going to inspire them. And hopefully that's going to lead to people doing their own research. And that's why, to bring it back to the field guide, that's why the field guide is so
yes.
important, because it connects what you're hearing in the classroom to what you can see when you're driving around the local area.
You remind me of something that's not related to Rev 250, but it's the history of the area that I've been fascinated with since I was a little kid, and that's the geologic history of the Ice Age in this area. And there's a book authored by a Robert and Johanna Titus, that both professors who, and it also is a guidebook. I would say that these are things that, you know, people should just keep in their car. My friend Tony Musso has his, you know, hidden secrets of the Hudson Valley and all that. Collect these books.
There's so much to know. I mean, you could read endlessly and learn more about this region. There's so much history. And you just mentioned the Ice Age. And
yes.
We have evidence here. We have archaeological evidence in Orange County and in the region that goes back to just that moment when the glaciers are retreating and you have the Ice Age ending. You have human habitation in some of the locations, including mm-hmm. a location called Dutchess Quarry that goes back 13,000 years.
Yes.
So we have, think about, you know, we're talking about 250 years when we talk about the semi-quincentennial.
Yes.
But just imagine the layers and layers of history that go back 13,000 years right where we are.
Exactly. So Johanna Poor, Orange County historian in studio. Let's get into Zoll's sports report and then pick up the conversation there on the Beacon. 820 Hudson Valley Focus Live. On No, we don't want to get out of this place. We want to learn more about this place. And in studio, Johanna Poor, Orange County historian in studio. So let's talk, Johanna, about one of those obscure things that you were just talking to Robbie about.
Sure. Yeah, so I was mentioning that we have this very long commemorative period. It's an eight and a half year war that took place for our independence. And so you get local governments and communities will pick something to celebrate, like Philadelphia is going to go very big this year on, right. on the Declaration of Independence anniversary, which is coming up July 4th. And Boston, you know, they had their wonderful, I was there for it, their Tea Party reenactment. But for us, next year, 2027 is really our big year. And I mean, you can argue every year of the war was important here in the Hudson Valley. And that's, you know, our field guide and a lot of the resources locally will highlight different things throughout the period. But I see it as that being sort of our big year because it's the anniversary of when the British came up the Hudson River and they broke through at West Point. They attacked at Fort Montgomery and defeated the Americans there. And then they moved up to Kingston and burned the city of Kingston. So that's when we're gonna see reenactments and things that are more river centric.
Well,
I
hope you don't reenact the actual burning. That would not be good. But yeah, let's get more into the obscure things. Because you're just retelling a story, how you're just driving around the area, and then you just envision the reenactment yourself. I bet a lot of other people would love to have that in themselves too. So
before you answer though, so I mean, do you sit there and like your mind just creates these pictures of it actually happening?
Yes, I think part of being a historian is that you, when you read something, it really comes off the page.
Yes.
And I always say history is a web. So it's like you learn a little bit, and then you learn a little more. And then when you start making connections, that's when it gets really exciting. And so for me, having done this for 20 years, my web is very vivid and complete. And so I'm able to just drive around. I'm at a red light staring into a field and imagining, you know, what took place there at some point in the past. And so I do have a couple of favorite spots when I'm driving around that most people wouldn't realize are special if you don't know the background to it.
Share one or two of us.
Sure. So I mentioned 1777, and that's when the Battle of Fort Montgomery takes place. It's a disaster for the Americans. We're defeated, and the remaining troops, the ones that aren't captured, are able to sort of retreat and flee into New Windsor, and where, you know, we had some encampments, and they were able to sort of make their way back. So the commander, George Clinton, makes his way back to a tavern, which it was called the Falls Tavern, and it was located on the intersection of Route 207 and 300. So pretty much like by Walmart, not too far from Walmart when you're in Newburgh. And at that intersection, you can look out into the empty field. There's a historic marker there. But because it's such a busy intersection, it's even hard to read the signs.
Yes.
But what that marks is the place of the tavern. And one of the stories that took place there is that there was a runner named Daniel Taylor. So in that day and age, you had to send a message. So you have Henry Clinton defeating the Americans at Fort Montgomery. And now he needs to meet up with Burgoyne, who's supposed to attack at Saratoga and then come south. And then the two armies are going to combine. They're going to hold the Hudson River. And that's going to, in their minds, hopefully end the war because they'll control New York.
Right.
So they send the runner, Daniel Taylor, with a message. They curl up a little piece of paper with a message, put it into a silver bullet, and he runs, literally runs, on his way to try to make it all the way up to the Saratoga area to inform them, we've made it through, we've won, come meet us, and we're ready. But what happens is he ends up in New Windsor, and he ends up in this nest of all these retreating soldiers and gets captured, and he gets brought to the tavern where they interrogate him, and eventually they are able to realize he's got this secret message. He swallows it in order to hide it. They see what's happening, and they actually make him vomit it up in order to retrieve this message from him. So it's just a crazy story, but it took place right there.
And it's just amazing that these stories, you know, were preserved, I guess I'd say, and so that we can, you know, can share them with us all these years later.
Yeah, we're lucky people wrote things down and kept diaries.
I mean, it's incredibly fascinating because I looked up where this intersection was, and I know exactly where it is, and like I was telling you, I'm from Massachusetts, so when I identify something in the Valley, I'm really proud of myself because, like, oh, I actually know where that is. But again, we were talking about it too because sometimes you have to write it down because we would not know where it would be. Like the falling out of George Washington and Alexander Hamilton, like you were just explaining, because now that's just a dentistry, and now you get your teeth cleaned, but really you're just walking, you're walking over history.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's just another great story. That's a different part of town, but down on River Road, when you're driving out of the city of Newburgh south, heading into New Windsor, you come up a hill, and at the top of the crest of the hill, there's an overgrown historic marker in the woods there, and it marks the spot of the Ellison House, where Washington lived during the winter of 1780 into 81. So he was planning Yorktown. He was planning the Yorktown campaign from that headquarters. And Hamilton was on his staff at the time, and they were there. And there's a very famous story where Hamilton, and it's in the musical too, you know, where they have an argument. But essentially he calls down for Hamilton to assist him. Hamilton ignores him, takes too long to make it back up the stairs. And by the time he gets to the top of the stairs, Washington says, "You've left me waiting. How dare you?" You know, and they have this argument where he says, "I'm out of here," and he leaves. So the falling out of Hamilton and Washington that occurs before Yorktown, famously, you know, Hamilton wanted command of an army. Washington wanted to keep him as, you know, as more of an intellectual in the office itself, because he was helping him draft letters and come up with policy, and you know, he needed him on the intellectual side, but that was the friction, and it happened right there in the Ellison House, which the house doesn't exist, but there is a historic marker there.
We're talking Rev 250 historical events, and Orange County historian Johanna Poor in the studio with us. We're already down to like 8:26, 8:27. Maybe I don't know what your schedule is. Maybe even after this 8:30 break, spend a few more minutes with us, and because you've got lots of other events, we can maybe run through some of the things that are coming up in the next several months, you know, and also your availability to go out and make presentations to schools, to other groups. How is that?
Yeah, our plan right now is in my office. There's three of us in the county historian's office. The three of us are really focused on the 250th this year. I mean, obviously, we're making it a priority. So from now through July or August or so, our plan is exactly that. We're trying to get out to as many groups as possible to hand out field guides. So senior centers, schools, historical societies, and places, any venue that is interested in this, we're trying to get out as much as we can.
And that, yeah, I mean, that's... I guess the other thing, too, is reaching out to other organizations here, thinking about the FDR, the historians they have up there. I assume you know some of those folks as well. It's just an exciting time.
It's a really great chance to focus on the Revolutionary War. We get lost in so many of the other layers of you know, things that are taking place. It's a nice time to focus on the history.
When I think back about the river, and I've said this many times, you know, when I was a little kid, we lived in downtown Poughkeepsie. There was no north-south arterial cutting it off. I had two older brothers. We could walk from our house down to what was then Dutton Lumber Company and watch the ships unload the lumber that was coming. But this river, it's just incredible. What America's first American heritage river. I think it was 1996 when that designation was made at the foot of Main Street in Poughkeepsie, and I made sure I was there that day for that designation. And as you said, Johanna, talking about the British coming up, we've spoken many times here about the individual who forged the chain that was across the river.
Yeah, it's a great topic, and I'll tell you a little coincidental story. I went into a game shop on Liberty Street in Newburgh that recently opened up, and the owner there, his name is John, was at the desk, got talking to him. It turned out he was a retired fireman from West Point.
Okay.
He's now opened this game shop on Liberty Street, and he was telling me that when he was working as a fireman, they got a grant from New York State, I believe, to do scuba diving in the Hudson.
Wow.
To try to identify the location of all of those obstructions that were put in the river to defend the Hudson. And he told me that he dove in the Hudson and he was able to identify something called chevaux de frise, which were essentially wooden boxes that would be filled with rocks with a spike put on them with a metal tip. And they would drop these into the river, and the American boats, I just learned all this weekend from him because he did the work, the American boats were shallow enough they wouldn't hit the
wouldn't
spike.
Hit it. Johanna Poor, Orange County historian in studio. Quick break and then back with more on The Beacon.
More painful and laughter, much louder, yeah. 8:35, Hudson Valley Focus Live on the Beacon. Back to history. Orange County historian Johanna Poor in studio. So let's pick up the conversation where we left
off. Sure. Yeah, we got talking about the defense of the Hudson and all of the creative ways that they fortified the area. So obviously there were places like Fort Putnam that were built to protect, and Constitution Island was fortified. But there was also the chain across the river.
Yes.
And you can see parts of that at Trophy Point at West Point, and also the boom, the logs, are at Washington's headquarters in Newburgh in their museum. So you can see a part of it there. But another creative thing that they used to protect the river was called Chavota Free. And they were boxes, wooden boxes filled with rocks with a wooden spike and a metal tip. And they were dropped into the river. And they were meant to protect and slow down the British ships. The American ships were shallow and could go over them or around them, and they kind of knew where they were. But the idea was that if the British ships came through, it would be a barrier to them. But as I was mentioning, I was speaking just this weekend with John, who owns the Story Forge game shop on Liberty Street in Newburgh, right across from Washington's headquarters. And when he was younger, he was on a scuba team out of the West Point Fire Department. And they got a grant to go down into the Hudson River and actually look for these chevaux and see what's left of them. And they found them. They actually found them.
Wow.
And they discovered, in very murky conditions, they had to mostly feel their way through it. But that's partly why they were doing research at the local places, trying to identify the shapes and all of that. They ended up discovering that they are stretched from Plum Point in New Windsor to Bannerman Island. So that's actually where they are. They're dotted along the riverbed. They're still in place. You know, they've deteriorated, and they're just heaps of now, wood and stone. But they're there, and that's one of the interesting things about all the remnants that are around us. It's just so much. There's just so much of this still around that we don't even think about.
Yeah, and that I was mentioning the fact that the boat building that took place on the Hudson River, and you told me something that I was not aware of in terms of the shipbuilding.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of history related to it. I just told you one little tidbit, which is that the last public appearance that Teddy Roosevelt made was actually christening a ship at the Newburgh shipyards, and it was during World War I. We were building ships for the war effort.
And I mean, this went all the way back, and then the commerce about the Hudson River sloops. Well, of course, the sloop Clearwater, built back in the 1960s with the help of Pete Seeger, really built on kind of a style that went all the way back. That the commerce that moved up and down the river that was so critically important.
Absolutely, that's the origin story of most of our port cities along the river. So you had farms, in Orange County in particular, we had a lot of dairy farms.
Mm-hmm.
So you had dairy that has to move to market very quickly, whether it's milk or cheese or butter. Butter was really our main thing because the distance between us and the market in New York City. It worked well for butter. So
yes.
They were putting everything on wagons and then bringing it down to the port cities and then putting them onto sloops, and it would go into New York City and then be sold from there. So that's but produce as well, and also further afield, because as you work out geographically, what can survive the journey longer?
Mm-hmm.
You have things coming out of like the Sullivan County area that were leather goods. So there was a lot of tanneries up in that area because then it could be brought down to the ports and sold in New York. So that's a lot of the origin of our early commerce.
When Will Tatum was here, we were also talking about which actually crosses the river on both sides of the river is Borden's Dairy and the importance of that later on after the Revolution, for sure.
Yeah, because as technology was developing around here, so the Erie Railroad is the first main railroad through here. And that was primarily, bringing the dairy and bringing it faster and bringing fresher milk into the city. And the technology for the refrigerated rail cars gets invented here as well in the Hudson Valley. So there's a lot of innovation that takes place that relates to that kind of commerce. And a lot of people don't realize you got to add banking into that too. Because if you are going to, have people coming together to do trade,
yes,
you have to have a banking network as well. So some of the early banks of America are founded around here, and you get these banking hubs, in the Hudson Valley.
Just Johanna Poor, what are some of the other events that are coming up in the near future?
Sure. So Westchester has their Battle of White Plains coming up in October, so that's going to be a big reenactment. Then, as I said, next year, October of 1777 or 2027, we're going to see a lot of reenactments related to that military campaign on the river. So not just us with Fort Montgomery, but also Kingston with the burning of Kingston. So we'll see that. Next year after that, 2028, is going to be the founding of West Point. But on a day-to-day level, we have, for instance, Freedom Fest this year. Every year, Orange County has a fireworks display at Thomas Bull Park. And we'll...
That's a beautiful facility.
Yeah. So we will be promoting 250, and we'll have reenactors there this year, so it'll be a little extra special. And one of the best things about that event, from historians who, like we said, most people don't realize these things, but us historians know, Thomas Bull was a loyalist. So every year, Orange County sets off our patriotic fireworks in July on the land of the loyalist, Thomas Bull. So there's a little bit of, you know, poetic justice there that we have that.
Any other events that are happening locally over the next couple of months? Are there?
Well, I mean, this weekend, Saturday, the Woodbury Historical Society is hosting an event where they're going to have a small a display on 250 history. So that's coming up very soon. I would say, you know, it's April now, and so most of the historic sites are opening up. There's so many important places to go. Washington's headquarters, New Windsor Cantonment, Knox's headquarters, Fort Montgomery, and just over the border from us, Stony Point as well, and
yes.
Senate House in Kingston. And, I mean, it's everywhere around us. But I think a lot of people, if you're looking for a little day trip that's a little more obscure, that you haven't visited, if you're more Hudson Valley-centric, is along the Delaware River. Joseph Brant attacked. He was a native Mohawk warrior that worked with the British, and he came up the Delaware River and he attacked the fortifications that were there, which eventually led to the Battle of Minisink. So if you want a day trip and just follow along the Delaware River, make your way up into Sullivan County and see the battlefield there. It's really a great story to follow along with.
Well, and as you and I were talking, Johanna, to go down, you know, let's say you go down this side of the river, this side of the river, it doesn't matter, cross over the Bear Mountain Bridge, make your loop around, go up and back over the Kingston-Rhinecliff Bridge. And
that's a great day trip. And we have Mount Gouldian on this side,
yes,
which is where the Society of Cincinnati was founded. So you could, you know, in Poughkeepsie is where our state constitution was written and, you know, authorized. I mean, there's so many places to go that on both sides of the river.
Exactly. And again, to make a day trip out of it, or even a weekend trip, if you have guests, let's say, coming from out of the area, there's lots of, you know, different accommodations that we have and lots of good restaurants that we have. And again, so we'll be continuing these conversations as we go forward from here. But this idea about actually organizing and laying out the day trips that can engage the history of the kinds of things that we've talked about, as well as the geologic history of this valley. You can incorporate both of those things at the same time.
It's all related, because why was Washington here? I mean, the reason that he brought his army to New Windsor was to protect it behind the mountain range,
yes,
where there was a lot of fresh water, where there was wood to build cabins.
Yes.
Why was, you know, Warwick important? As a supply location, it's because you have the pass through the Ramapo where you're able to bring supplies back and forth. We had to move away from New York City because the British controlled New York. And so we had to be in the Hudson Valley, north of the mountains, essentially, in order to be protected and have the resources that were needed to feed and clothe an army of that size.
And then again, when you look at the strategic location of West Point itself, and how Constitution Island and the bend in the river right there, and the way the currents are, that would, with sailing ships, it would slow the movement of those sailing ships.
And we're in Beacon right now, the Beacon Fire. You know, you had visibility down, up and down the river. They were able to have a location where they could notify if the British were on their way.
Signal fires on Mount Beacon.
Yeah, that's why it's called Beacon.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, Johanna Poor, it's been a pleasure to have you in studio in the first of many conversations. And thanks to you but all of County Executive Newhouse, the legislatures who have funded these operations, to, and I would say the people are involved in reenactments to keep these issues alive and brought back to life.
It's taken a lot of people to get here. This field guide was put together by a group of volunteers, the commission that we have, that, you know, they're listed in the book, but a big group that got together and really prioritized what stories do we want to tell.
Excellent, excellent. We'll look forward to further conversations. Quick Zoles sports break, and then back to take it up to the 9 o'clock hour on Hudson Valley Focus Live on The Beacon.